Committee to order. And I know Representative Norton has been looking at the minutes and has made sure that everything is correct on them, so I'm sure she's more than willing to move the minutes.
I would be happy to move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Norton. Is any discussion on the minutes for what day was that? February 5th? Seeing none. All those in favor of the minutes as written, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Passed. Okay. Today we have a couple of things on the agenda. We have House File 130, which is the Board of Accountancy. And then we have an overview of the Governor's Workforce Council. I think they're coming in sometime right around 1 o'clock. So we need to be done with the accountants by 1. So, Representative Gunther.
Yes, sir.
Would you like to present your bill?
I would be delighted to.
And I know there's a few amendments. One a little bit more substantial than the other two. And you did get those to me very early in the morning, so we're just going to put those on.
I have amendments. They passed out.
Representative Gunther, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move House File 130 to be included in the committee's omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr.
And before I go start telling everybody what a wonderful bill this is, I have a series of amendments that I'd like to include, and I think the chairman has an amendment also. We'll start out with the A4 amendment is basically nothing but a placeholder for the omnibus bill, and I would appreciate everybody's support.
Thank you, Representative Gunther. Is there any discussion on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. That one's on.
Thank you. And I think it would probably be important for the chairman to put forth his amendment to this bill next because they kind of dovetail together.
That's just fine. Members, the way the bill is written, I'd like to move the A3 amendment. As such, I will explain it. As written, it essentially said that the accountancy board didn't have to come back here for a...
Good.
You don't have it?
We don't have it, Mr. Chair.
We don't have anything.
No, they're being passed out now.
We'll wait. Hate that cost cutting when they cut down our number of pages in our committee. But we are reforming.
And we're high-paid pages. Here, John, is this the one we haven't voted on?
We already passed the A4 amendment.
We just got that one.
Okay,
we don't
we'll wait.
A3.
We're going to wait.
One, three, and four.
That's the only good one, right?
And is this to get a fiscal amount, Mr.
Yeah.
Chair?
We do one.
I'm sorry, what was that,
Representative Norton? Well, I don't know.
Let's wait. Just wait when the A3 comes up. Can I move
this?
Okay. Which one?
We just got the A4 and you've already voted on it. So I had questions about it.
Okay.
That's fine.
Has everyone got the A1, A3, and A4 amendments?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to move for reconsideration of the, because one of the members has said there's a question on the A4 amendment. And so, all those in favor of reconsideration of the A4 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for the record, we just didn't have a copy before us, and
yeah.
I hate voting on something I can't
see. Well, we understand.
That's, so, thank you.
Again, you know, when we keep cutting costs, we keep getting rid of the pages.
On the A4 amendment, it does appear to be a placeholder to put in dollar amounts. And since this is a finance committee, should we have a fiscal note now, or it seems like in a finance committee usually get the fiscal note prior to coming to the committee. So I guess I'm just questioning why they're empty at this point.
So, Representative Norton. Right at the present time,
give me an A4 amendment.
The accountancy board does not have the exact dollar figure, or didn't this morning, so we did not have a fiscal note for it. But we will have the fiscal note prior to it coming back up for consideration in the when we put it together into the omnibus bill, and we will bring forth a. If we get it before then, I'll make sure everyone gets it, and then they'll have time to make any questions they ready for that. And we're about a month or two out.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So, unless there's other questions on the A4 amendment. Representative Gunther, did you have a fiscal note made on this?
Yes, there was, yes. Mr. Chairman. And the fiscal note is a positive, fiscal note. We bring in more money than this bill costs.
Could I get one of the pages to make copies of that?
I don't think the fiscal note has been passed out. I got a copy of it.
We got one copy here, and I was going to go make more copies for the members.
Okay.
So why don't, before we put the A4 on, we'll continue to discuss the amendment. We'll put on the other two amendments, and that'll hold the A4 until the fiscal note gets here.
Very well.
Okay, I have the eight. We've already done the A4. I'm going to do the A3 at the present time. Okay. Everyone have the A3 amendment?
Please.
I'd like to offer the A3 amendment, and the reason I'm offering it is inadvertently the language in the bill essentially said that the accountancy board was exempt from rulemaking authority and didn't have to go do it any longer. And then they also did not have to come back to the legislature for a fee change, which is not something I'm willing to give up. This language requires them to come back to the Capitol to change any fees that they may or may not want to change years down the road. So it's something that we never give up. We rarely ever give up the ability to have control over a fee or a tax. And that's what this does, is maintains the control of setting of a fee for an accountancy license and all the others that are in the bill. It's on page 3. It starts at line 16. After section, insert as provided in paragraph B. And on line 17, after shall, insert charge the following fee. And delete line 18. Well, again, members, this was an inadvertent miss on the three of us that read the bill before it was put in, and I apologize for that. But what this does is require that the Board of Accountancy has to come back before this committee and before this legislature to change their fees up or down. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. A3 is put on. And I think you have an amendment.
I have the A1 amendment, Mr. Chairman, and this is for, this basically has the bill to be approved following enactment, in other words, following the governor's signature. This is approved so that the Board of Accountancy can increase the staffing that's necessary, as well as some funds that are necessary to pay that staffing. And rule writing for the bill. Without that, somebody had to go borrow some money or something. So I think it's very appropriate and very common practice for freshmen that if you want a bill passed so you can have some funds or whatever from that bill, that you make it upon enactment or upon when the governor signs it. And I appreciate your support.
Any questions concerning the A1 amendment? Any questions with the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Mr. Representative Gunther, would you explain your bill?
I would be happy to, Mr. Chairman. This is Section 1 of the bill. Basically, annually renewal instead of renewing it every 3 years. The purpose of that is continuing professional education credits were sometimes left out when they did it for 3 years. This way, if they have to renew it December 31st of every year, they will then have to put in all the continuing professional education credits that they have coming, and will eliminate the possibility of being not eliminated, but it will curtail a lot of the fines and stuff that various practitioners had to pay because they didn't have their reports in on time. And then Section 2 is an amendment for obsolete statutory references are repealed. Section 3, continuing professional education credits will be earned and reported annually, like I said earlier. And currently, continued professional education credits must be earned by June 30th and reported by July 31st. So Section 4, we have, according to Minnesota statute, the amendment is the Subdivision 5 moves the Board of Accountancy fee structure to Rule 1105.0600 in statute. The fee structure remains unchanged with the exception of four fees, which included in their initial issuance of CPA certificate, renewal of an active CPA certificate, an increase of $55, a renewal of registered accounting practitioner firm permits, an increase of $55 from $45 to $100. Renewal of inactive CPA certificate, an increase of $15 from $10. So basically then in Section 4, an additional paragraph H2 incorporates the Uniform Accountancy Act, UAA, changes regarding the allowable CPA firm's name passed to by NSABA. And if you want to know the acronym, she can give them to you. To NASBA. And basically, it takes care of the moving of the statute. And then it also statute sections and rules repeal that repeal obsolete, out-of-date language. And there's four sections in the statute, 32A, 326A.04, Section 2, Subdivision 3, Paragraph 2, by repealing obsolete language with requirements in effect prior to July 6th. Okay, then we have another one that is changing the statutes from 326A.04, Section 5, Subdivision 7, Paragraph 3II, with repealing obsolete language dealing with requirements in effect prior to July 006. And there's two more. If anybody wants to know about them, we'd certainly be glad and happy to tell you about them. And with that, I would appreciate your support in this bill. I think it's something that's been in progress and is due. And very seldom do we have to change anything in the Board of Accountancy. So this will be one that you should remember because it doesn't happen all the time. So with that, we'd be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Gunther, I see you have a witness at the table.
I do.
And would she care to identify herself and add anything she wants to, or is she just here to answer questions?
Hi, I'm Sharon Jensen. I'm a member of the Board of Accountancy, and I am just here to help Representative Gunther answer your questions.
Representative Leiter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there anybody out there speaking against these increases, the association?
That, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, not to our knowledge. The board has worked with the Minnesota Society and MAPPA, and this bill is a joint effort by the three organizations, which has been brought forth to you.
Okay. The three organizations.
Ms. Jensen, could you explain the three organizations that you work with?
The Minnesota Society of CPAs and the Minnesota Association of Public Accountants. I always say that backwards. I apologize to Eric. but we work very closely with them on all issues that we face in the accounting profession.
Okay. The third.
Did you have another question, Representative Leiter?
The third organization, I hear two, or did I hear the third?
The State Board of Accountancy.
The State Board, got it. Thank you.
Representative Mulvey.
Mr. Chairman, I was just indicating there he was asking for the third.
Representative Newton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther, I know you've both been on Jobs Committee for a long time. Are there other organizations that use statute rather than rule when they set fees? Do you know? I mean, is this normal procedure, or are rules usually used for those fees that are changing with some regularity, so we don't have to constantly change the statutes?
Is that for
Either of you? Because I know you've been on the committee for a long time.
Board of Cosmetology, Board of Barbers. There's many boards that we deal with in this committee. They come to us. One of the biggest reasons they come to us is to change their fees, and there certainly is architecture, engineers, many others. You have some
electricians, the pipe fitters, the plumbers.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, my question is, I understand that, but I wonder, is it in statute or is it rule on the fees? Statute.
I think for the one for accountancy, cosmetology, and barbers there. It is in statute, yes.
Mr. Chair.
Ron should know that.
Yes. About 10 years ago, the legislature changed the law and required that all fees be changed only by the legislature. There is no fees allowed to be changed by rule anymore in Minnesota.
Thank you.
So every fee charged by any agency is done only at the legislature, not by rule or by boards, agency boards.
Always good to have staff here. And if people want more information on it, I'll tell you in a minute here. 16A. I can read it this far away. 16A, I was reading in case they wanted to write it down. 1283. And it's legislative approval required for fees. So, yes. They all come to us now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was similar to that, and we've answered the question about why we have to, but my question goes, I think, a little bit different. My question is, why don't you just increase the amount of your initial issuance of certification and renewal and forget a number of these fees, including 25 cents a page for copies, and why can't that be handled in a way with just a higher fee rather than all the breakdown? It seems like this is micromanaging a bit.
Ms. Jensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is no increase to those fees. What you see, the 17 lines that are being brought into statute, are what used to reside in rules. And with the explanation that you had why we have to move that into statute, we have not increased our fees for over 30 years, so our fees remained in statute until this point. The only fees that are being raised are the fee on line 1, 2, 11, and 16. The rest of them are exactly the same as what appear in rules.
And Mr. Chair?
Representative Norton.
That was exactly my point, ma'am. I'm questioning why we can't just raise the initial fee, because this actually, I'm quite shocked that it's only $150 compared to what we charge a lot of other medical and businesses for fees, and drop all the rest of these at this time. Why not just raise the initial fee to a couple $100 and have this some of those other line items be included rather than have it be in the legislature that would have to be changed by Mr. Chair and others regularly.
Ms. Jensen, did you want to add to that, or do I need to handle this one?
I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Representative Norton, there's a number of things in there, in that question. It is inappropriate. I understand where you're going with that, but to have an active, there's a difference between an active accountant, retired accountant, or inactive accountant, and to keep your license. I do that with my pipe fitting license, or high pressure steam license. The cost to charge for copying, well, we used to do that until people started wanting, you just send them send them to a website, but then they'd say they want it copied, and they want 100 or 200 or 500 pages copied, and it could get onerous. And in order to keep people from just trying to rack up bills, they started, and I can't remember how long ago it was, charging for the copies. And they tried to keep it as reasonable as possible. And I'm going to guess that the Board of Accountancy is pretty sharp with a pencil trying to make sure that they don't overcharge those accountants, having a couple in the family. So they do come here on a regular basis, and this is a little bit longer of a list than some of the others. I'll agree to that. But they are accountants. Does that answer your question at all?
They are accountants. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before I ask if there's any opposition to this bill in the audience, I'd like to add, we've gotten the fiscal note. Do you have any added comments or any questions about the fiscal note numbers? It really is they bring in $84,000 more than what they're actually taking out. So this is a cash cow for us. Oh, wait, I didn't say that. And the accountants seem to agree to it. Any other questions? So I'm going to move the A. Did you have a question on the fiscal note?
Well, kind of, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where it fits in. I just do have some questions about the fees and so forth. So wherever you want to take that question.
I'm going to offer the A4 amendment, mm-hmm. which is the placeholder for the omnibus bill. This has to be in. I'd either do it now or I can do it in 2 months when the omnibus bill gets put together. So, and they don't have their dollar figure in because I haven't decided what it's going to be yet. So the A4 amendment is on the table. Are there any questions on the A4 amendment? All those in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. All right. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gunther, I just need to be clear, or want to be clear. I don't need to be necessarily, but I want to be clear on the fee structure. You know, in my area of the state, which I talk about frequently, there's a lot of small mom and pop type CPA firms up there. And can you explain to me the fee increases and how much more out of pocket expense they're going to have over a 3-year period compared to now?
Mr. Gunther, or Representative Gunther, or Jensen, Ms. Jensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not, if I don't answer your question, let me know. There will be an increase for the annual renewal of their licensing by $100. So I think you would consider that an additional out-of-pocket cost to the practitioners. The practitioners... by and large, I'm sure there are a few that don't agree with this, but understand the necessity of the increase in the fees in order to maintain a quality enforcement and regulatory program. So they are supportive of these increases. I understand the small practitioners' issues, but our fees have been extremely low, and when we compare ourselves to other states, this is even lower than most states surrounding us at this point in time. So the fee increases, we believe, are modest but necessary for us to be able to hire the staff and the investigators. Given the climate that we work in right now, our enforcement cases have escalated and the severity of those cases have escalated. So the board feels it necessary to have this increase to get additional staff to help with those programs. Did I answer your question? Okay.
Representative Isaacson.
Yes, just a quick question, and it could be because this is obvious to everybody but me, so I want to make sure I get this right. We're increasing, as you said, $100 for renewal and other areas, but we're also ending up with $84,000 more than we need. So I guess I don't understand how we're seeing a necessary increase when at the end of the day you still have $84,000 more. Maybe I don't see the big picture, but can you walk me through, if we're already ending up with a surplus, why are we raising the fees?
Representative Gunther, would you care to handle that one, or would you prefer to have Ms. Gunther?
I would be delighted to attempt to do that.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you, sir.
One of the things that we do in many departments, labor and industry collects a lot of fees. They collect very, very many times more than is necessary for the fees that are that they need to. Consequently, we do not have to appropriate any money from this committee except for one instance to labor and industry. And they self-fund themselves, and they have a little bit left over. So if they become something is necessary for the organization that is have oversight over them, they can have a little money to work on. But there is many fees that we overcollect. The barbers used to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars more than they needed to. And in your case, you give them all a bonus.
I'm a quick sell. That's not a problem, right?
You're gonna say that.
Yeah, not a problem. I have a follow-up.
Go ahead.
So just indulge me here as a new person that's trying to understand the process. They charge a fee. It's collected. They take part of it, and the other part of it goes where exactly? Where would the $84,000, for example, go?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It goes in the general fund of the state of Minnesota.
That may or may not be appropriated back to them if they need it?
Mr. Chair, I'll try to field this for you. Without the fee increase, we right. generate around $900,000 plus in revenues.
Sure.
That revenue goes to the general fund, as does other professional boards.
Right.
We're all alike. And our appropriations have been in the past about 50% to 60% of those funds. So the general fund keeps the balance. And when it was determined that we needed to hire additional staff to maintain an enforcement program, we talked to the budget office and asked if it would be possible to appropriate more funds out of what we already collect back to us, and were informed that if we needed additional funds in our appropriation, then we needed to come up with the additional revenue, because the funds that they are keeping at this point go for other purposes, but if they were to give them back to us, it would create a hole in their budget that they would have to cover from other revenues. So we needed to come up with additional revenues to ask for additional appropriations.
And that exposes the dirty little secret of state government and county government and city government. Did you have a follow-up?
Well, it's good to confirm that I see the insanity of that process. I appreciate that, and I would definitely be investing in that in the future. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kiefer, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is it about a sales tax increase?
A service tax increase, actually. Thank you. Just wondering on the timing of this bill, I'm sure that the authors were working probably over the summer or something on this, and now that we've seen the budget, is there any additional input on the impact of a 5% increase in your service taxes on the cost of doing business? Thank you.
Ms. Jensen, I think you get the answer to that one.
Mr. Chair, yes, there will be impact to the profession. Any time that you increased fees or put an additional line to the fees that we charge, it's going to be passed on to the clients that we service. So there will be impact to the people that we currently service, in that their fees will be increased for their services that they contract with us for.
Anything else? All right. Representative Clark, you had a question.
I just had a question following up on Representative Isaac's question. Is it safe to say that the additional fees that are left over are part of the administrative costs that the department incurs to deal with your program?
Ms. Jensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure if I'm clear on your question, but are the additional fees that we're trying to collect or additional appropriations?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Clark.
I was just trying to respond to this idea that there's excess funding, and I'm just asking if that excess funding is really administrative costs for the agency beyond your specific part of the agency.
Mr. Chair, Representative, they are not, well, if you consider staffing administrative costs, yes, then it would be for administrative costs.
Mr. Chairman, that's it. I just thought that was important to say. This money isn't just going into some hole. It's going to fund the agency, it sounds like. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Representative Metcalf, did you have a question? And then I think we're going to vote on this because we're... Wait a minute. Representative Eisenstein, you had a question.
At the risk of unintentionally becoming friends with Representative Albright, I'm going to ask the following question. I want to make sure... No, you don't. I want to make sure that I understand this as clearly as it seems painfully obvious at the moment, because I'm sure I'll freak out about it later. Is it my understanding, in your instance, that you guys charge a fee to become licensed as accountants, and that fee then goes to the general fund, of which we appropriate back, I think you said, 60% of it?
Or less, yeah.
Or less. So we are asking businesses to get a license that would be to maintain their professional standing, and at the same time siphoning off 40%+ that goes back into the general fund. I mean, is that a fair statement?
Denson, as the chair of the committee.
And I realize that I'm poking a bear and I'm making friends with the wrong side perhaps at this point, but I really am a little struck by that.
Representative Isaacson, let me tell you that you're absolutely flat out right on the numbers.
All right.
Let me finish with another story about a freshman about 12 to 14 years ago.
Oh, here we go.
That had kind of some similar questions.
This is Paul. And is no longer in office, or what are you saying?
He's in office, but
chair of the committee.
It took him a while to understand, as departments came to his office and explained in no uncertain terms, and then a chairman came to his office and explained in no uncertain terms that this was the way we've been doing it for about 100 years or 75 years, and if you go, I will, and you can come to my office, and I'll show you the list of the agencies that and the local governments and the counties that have that kind of a arrangement.
And it seems to me to maybe go against my party's approach to transparency, and I'm struggling with that.
So I am going to give Representative Metza his question, and then we're going to vote on this. Because we have another bill up, or another presentation up. So Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jensen, I guess I was watching TV the other night, and there was a TurboTax commercial that came on, which I'm sure many of you have maybe seen, of the people doing their taxes, and then the guy comes home and finds his tax guy under the sink, and he's actually a plumber. And would you say that some of these increases, anyway, not to, you know, make a joke out of this at all, but would you say some of these increases go towards protecting the consumer and making sure that when people are registering and filing with the board, that some of the process here and reasons that we're doing this are, in the end, helping the consumer on the back end, which is why your members, a majority of your members, I should say, are supporting this as well?
Ms. Jensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that would be true. One of the most vital programs that we provide is our enforcement program, which deals with those kinds of situations. And as I mentioned earlier, those complaints have escalated. That's primarily due to the environment of today's market. And we have additional workload and the severity of those. We're seeing a number of theft cases that we haven't seen traditionally in the past, but that's because of the environment in the market today.
One quick follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Quickly.
Okay. And Ms. Jensen, with that, are there other state agencies who help you do the enforcement that would be benefiting from the surplus that is given by the board? For the leftover funds from the fees and stuff, does that money go towards enforcement in terms of other agencies that would help you enforce any criminal activity or anything like that?
Well, we contract with the Department of Justice, Attorney General's Office, excuse me, for legal services. And so if we use more legal services, we pay more fees to that agency.
That's all. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would renew my motion to have House File 130 be passed and put in our omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair, point of clarification, please.
Sure.
At the beginning of the presentation, thank you, Mr. Chair. At the beginning of the presentation, you said that you were just going to lay it over and
for possible inclusion.
Now we're voting.
Excuse me, I missed. I'm sorry.
And now we're voting?
No. Just to lay it over.
Lay it over.
I don't have what? To. I was being kind of nice about it. So if you would like, I don't have to vote. I was just giving the opportunity to the committee.
I just want to be clear.
Thank you. So, thank you, Representative Gunter. I guess we just don't need a vote on it.
Okay.
And we'll hold it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
No, it's for sure.
Next on the agenda today is an overview of the Governor's Workforce Development Council report. Members, we have, according to our agenda here, we have Brian Lindsay, the Executive Director. And am I pronouncing it right? Inza?
Inez.
Inez. Wildwood, the chair of the Governor's Workforce Development Council. I know there are some people that want to comment on this particular bill. So we've got about 45 minutes left. So why don't I give you, it'll take you more than 15 or 20 minutes to present? All right. We'll go with the 15 because we always seem to go over. And that will leave at least 15 or 20 minutes for the others and some time for questions. So if you'd like to identify yourself for the tape and present your, we'll give it a minute here in case people have not gotten the competitive workforce, most competitive workforce in the world report. I think it's getting close enough to the end there. So, if you'd be so kind as, like I say, to introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Inez Wildwood. I am chair of the Governor's Workforce Development Council. I work, my job is working for ELEAT, which is the corporate parent to Minnesota Power, so I come down from Duluth.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Lindsley. I'm the executive director of the Governor's Workforce Development Council and did work on creating this report for the council members. I just want to note at the beginning of the testimony here that I'm also a staff person of the Department of Employment and Economic Development and so am here in favor of the governor's initiatives and that this council's recommendations are not included in the governor's budget. Just wanted to be very clear about that fact at the beginning of the testimony. And I'm here mostly to assist Chair Wildwood and present on some of the technical and data aspects of the report.
Thank you. Chair Wildwood.
Thank you. We're moving it forward. The GWDC is a federally mandated business-led council that serves the function as a workforce investment board at the state level for Minnesota. And our mission is to analyze and recommend workforce development policies to the governor and to the legislature to ensure that we keep a globally competitive workforce in Minnesota. You can see the council makeup that we have sectors from business and industry, six of those positions, community-based organizations. We have education, local government positions, organized labor, and state agencies, and the state legislature represented on the Governor's Workforce Development Council. The council operates independent from the administration. In Minnesota, we are called the Governor's Workforce Development Council, but by statute, we were called upon to deliver a report to the legislature of our thoughts for a competitive workforce. So we recommend policy innovations that hopefully result in benefits for our workers and businesses in Minnesota. We try to make sure and ensure that employers and other workforce partners make recommendations about improving education and training programs. And I believe you have two documents, the most recent one, and you've seen our All Hands on Deck document that we'll talk a bit about in the future here. And we also provide a venue for workforce stakeholders to build a shared vision and strategic alliances in Minnesota for these services.
So our brief presentation today will primarily cover the report that was just distributed to you. That will take most of the time, and then we'll pivot just quickly to the All Hands on Deck, which is a previous policy advisory that came out in 2011 and 2012 to the legislature with recommendations, and then really try to talk about how you can interact with the GWDC members in the future. As the executive director, I was operated the process to create the Workforce Center report, and that's, I know it's probably pretty small for you to see, but we wanted you to know that this is a very, it was a very deliberate process that the executive committee of the council followed. This is something that the timeline they came up with in October to develop the report, and tried to spend quite a bit of time trying to collect input from outside stakeholders, and it was run by the GWDC Council. One way that we did collect input was to do a survey to the Minnesota Workforce Council Association, and to several different sections of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Those survey responses were shared with and talked about in the GWDC full council meetings. And then the executive committee did develop draft recommendations, reviewed them, shared them with the full council to ask briefly for some comments and input before talking about them again, and then finally approving them in December. I can return back to this process if you have any questions about it in the future. I also wanted to note that this version of the report is a slightly modified version from the one that was submitted to the legislature in January 15th. This version includes an appendix that doubles the length of the report to include all those survey responses. We had originally posted those on the website and directed people there to view those survey responses, and we heard from several of the stakeholders who participated that they wanted those to be included in the report. So that's now about half of the report's length, their views on credential attainment and the questions therein. We did update program data on page 12. There was some discussion and disagreement between different parties about how credential attainment rates are calculated. None of the data itself actually changed, but some of the calculations about how things like credential rates are calculated were removed from the report. I can again return to any of this information again if that's of interest to the committee. But I should note that the recommendations in this version of the report are exactly the same as the previous version. So it's, by and large, the same report.
The report has three broad themes. The first is that Minnesota is one of the highest skill needs in the nation. We're actually tied with one other state as being anticipated that we'll need 70% of the jobs will require a post-secondary credential by 2018. Now, we acknowledge that there's debate about that, as there is about everything, and how we see it, and many debate the skills gap. You know, that the one thing I can tell you representing business is that it's very complex. This is a very complex issue, but that repeatedly we're hearing from businesses around the state that there is a gap between the skills of the applicants that are coming to their door and available where the business is, and that, and certainly particular in our manufacturing and some of our other industries, they are seeing that they are having difficulty finding people with the appropriate training to fill the jobs that they're posting.
One of the other themes that the council members wanted to be sure was part of the report was just a need for more information on program outcomes generally. This is just a sample graph that is included in the report. But generally, our council members who were talk about at council meetings about just needing more information on program outcomes, and this was apparent also in the Skills at Work meetings that the GWDC convened around the state, with a desire for more information about labor market information and workforce program outcomes. And finally, the third theme of that is included in the report is really about employment disparities in Minnesota. You may know that Minnesota has some of the highest disparity rates in the nation, and this was an issue that the council and the executive committee specifically wanted to address for a variety of reasons, but one of them being just that human capital resource is not being utilized or used to the greatest extent possible.
So the first recommendation in the report is to establish a competitive career pathways grants for adults within the Workforce Development Fund. Career pathways are a sequence of education and training services that enable students, and in this case adults, often while they're working, to advance over time to successfully higher levels of education and ultimately higher levels of employment, given the industry or the occupational sector that they're in. In many ways, career pathways are not a new program. And certainly in Minnesota, we've had many of those ingredients to career pathways for a long time. But it is a new strategy to deliver services to adults for their success. The outcomes that we would hope to see is that the Workforce Development Fund would aim to meet business needs and close the skills gap, and we believe that some changes in the direction that money would do that. Meet the needs not met by federal funding, tackle employment disparities, as Brian said, and serve the wide range of Minnesota adults, including those that face very significant barriers to getting education and training to work into higher level jobs.
Chair Wildwood asked that I include a history of the Workforce Development Fund because of the number one recommendation impacting or making a recommendation about the Workforce Development Fund. This history is from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. It has been used in previous testimonies in front of the legislature last year. But it was a fund that was created in 1990 and has experienced significant changes over time. Its name has changed. Some of the sources or the sources and uses of the fund have changed over time. I'm just providing a brief overview to you here so that you have context for that discussion. But if you wanted more information about it, you could certainly request that from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and I could help facilitate to make that possible. I guess the one other point I would mention is that this recommendation on expanding career pathways within the Workforce Development Fund can be accomplished in many different ways. So I'll leave it up to the committee to decide that if they'd like to. But there's no prescription from the council itself and its members about the best way to make that happen within the Workforce Development Fund.
Yes, we are in no way recommending an elimination or a reduction in that fund that the state needs. One of the things, if you read the report, you'll read a lot about the rigidity of federal dollars and the rules and the difficult position that can put providers that are workforce centers and community-based organizations in terms of meeting the needs of the adults who are coming to them.
This particular slide is also from the report about career pathways and is some supporting evidence to increase career pathways in Minnesota. This is a study that was done in Washington that found that career pathways programs enabled people to a higher degree of completion for college credits and college completion. There's more in the report on that point. And nationally, there's several other studies that are cited in the report supporting career pathways as helping increase credential attainment. This is another one of those pieces of supporting evidence. This is a study that included 160,000 Workforce Investment Act participants. Those are federal workforce programs that operate within Minnesota. This is for 12 states, 160,000 people, including participants in Minnesota, that found that workforce program participants. So the baseline here, the x-axis, right in the, you know, just that straight line is program participants, people who enrolled in the Workforce Investment Act adult program but did not enroll in training. And the red and blue lines representing men and women outcomes who did participate in training shows that they have a higher wages after participating, not just in the program, but engaging in enrolling and in training for that program.
Mr. Lindsay, if I might. Are you telling me you're tracking people 16 quarters out or essentially 4 years out with this study?
That's correct. I did not do this study, but yes, that's correct.
On page 17 of the report, we show the number of participants that enroll in training, and you'll see that less than half of the dislocated worker participants enroll in training. Obviously, there's lots of reasons that people may choose not to do that or may not have it accessible. But because of the benefits of training in job advancement and in meeting our workforce needs, we envision that a career pathway grant program in which all participants can enroll in training would be very beneficial to Minnesota's workforce. And finally, I've got to address the concerns that many people have raised about our recommendations, that we're simply wanting to take funding from dislocated worker program to fund things like the Minnesota Fast Track. I have been the chair and I'm now the co-chair of Minnesota Fast Track. And so I understand that people have that concern or may have tagged that onto this. But It's a program design of career pathways. There are many ways to have career pathways. We have not made a recommendation of taking money from dislocated workers to fund another program. But our recommendation specifically avoids supporting any one program, whether it be Fast Track or another. But it does attempt to be prescriptive about what kind of instruction not only are we seeing, but many other states in the country are seeing great results in of how you get low-skilled, unprepared, or less prepared adults into a career pathway that leads to employment at a higher level or into employment the first time. So really what we're suggesting is some innovation about supporting a new strategy that does have a great deal of conversation and also some federal focus from departments that are in the WIA stream of services in looking at different innovative ways to help adults get into the workforce or advance. So we want to reiterate that organizations receiving dislocated worker funding now, which we hold in very high regard, could certainly apply, and many of them are actively engaged in career pathway models currently. Our second recommendation to require publicly reported and disaggregated credential outcomes for workforce programs. Ryan?
So this is another example of data that's presented within the report. This particular point of data is looking at participants in the workforce programs who have less than a high school education, and it's looking at number of participants, number of exiters, the average length of enrollment, so how long they were involved with the program, and credential attainment rates. This example is presented simply as one level of granularity when looking at data. You'll notice that these programs have a variety of lengths, and they have different credential attainment rates for this particular population. And really, this recommendation is about getting deeper into some of these different populations and looking at different outcomes. So there's programs that can have more impact with certain populations than others. And so this recommendation makes recommendations about getting deeper and separating outcomes by type of person who's in it to look at their outcomes that are different.
Recommendation three is to direct workforce centers to focus more energy on helping customers attain industry-recognized credentials and 1 year of post-high school education. About 250,000 people came into workforce centers in Minnesota last year. I want to say again that we really believe that our workforce centers do a great job, but they're swamped with a huge number of people that need to be served. And as I said before, lots of times the federal funding streams do not allow for all of those individuals to get the funding that they, or get the services that they need because of the requirements, restrictions on the funding. So it's our recommendation to support the continued implementation of online and triage services so that workforce centers can help customers focus on getting the education and training that they need to be successful in our labor market. Again, it's about an industry-recognized credential. And sometimes in the industry that I work in the energy industry, that doesn't require a year of post-secondary education, but it may be a particular certificate or license or credential that says they have a skill that they can safely and productively work in our industry. And recommendation four, the last that's in our workforce center report, is that we have a way to ensure adults have easy access to local labor market information, including jobs in demand and information about related career pathways and training programs. It's very difficult, as I'm sure many of you have heard from your constituents, for an adult to be out of the workforce and be told that they don't have the skills for the jobs that are available where they live, and then to try to figure out what are those, what are the jobs, what are the skills, how do they match up. We have lots of data. If you have the time and the style and the ability to get at it and to make sense out of it, we're recommending that we work hard to make that more clear for individuals. And at the Skills at Work meetings around the state that the GWDC held in partnership with some of the philanthropic partners in the state, it was clear that people really were crying for easily accessible and comprehensive labor market information where they live. So, we have heard, you know, it's great that we have conversation going. We've heard that many support our new recommendations. We've heard the disagreement as well, and that funding, of course, is a key issue. We just know that we cannot do these things the same way that we always have as our economy is so rapidly changing. So we believe there's a need for continued discussion about the use of state funds that do have the ability to be more flexible to meet our needs, and how they can be used to serve both businesses and create the most value for the participants in the workforce system.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering how we're doing for time. I can cover a few minutes worth of our last report and some of the priorities that the council members have identified, or we could skip to the end of our presentation.
Why don't you give us a couple minutes, and then I'm going to call up the people who have contacted me with some concerns about your report.
Great.
And then we'll take questions at the end.
In 2011 and 2012, the GWDC issued a policy advisory that contained 16 recommendations. That report was called All Hands on Deck. I have a copy of it here. It's on our website. We've distributed it at this committee in the last session. We can certainly provide copies if the committee is interested in the future.
Please do.
GWDC members have had a variety of, tried to move some of these recommendations forward with bills in the previous session. And a survey of GWDC members indicated that our members had interest in trying to work on these particular initiatives from that report during this session. Those include an opportunity grant program about reducing cost barriers to credential attainment for adults, a recommendation about requiring career and post-secondary plans for all high school students to make sure that they have labor market information and information about careers in high school and before they leave high school. Another one is increasing opportunities for students to pursue post-secondary credit while in high school. The second last one is further aligning state academic standards and teacher preparation with real-world learning. There's several examples from around the state where teachers have been able to go into the workplace and get at CEUs for learning about local businesses and be able to bring that back to the classroom and share with students. And the last one is a 21st century school program modeled on the Star City program that existed in the past in Minnesota, but would revolve around innovative and workforce preparation standards for high schools.
So in terms of how the GWDC can help or what our role is, we're certainly a 32-member, very diverse group of Minnesotans who are passionate about the issue of workforce development to serve both the individuals and the students who live in Minnesota, as well as keep our economy thriving and business actively growing. And there's a great deal of expertise within that group that's focusing on how do we transition and continue to be a world-class workforce in Minnesota as the world turns so quickly around us. GWDC members are available and always willing to discuss these issues with you, to work on drafting bills, to answer your questions. Please ask. Thank you.
Thank you. You're going to stick around, I hope. I know there are some people who wanted to comment on this particular report, so why don't I ask you to step away, and if there's someone else that wanted to bring forth some comments. Well, people that I know. As I said, I think you've indicated you've got some concerns, so why don't you identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yeah, I'll go first, if that's okay, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ann Kilzer. I'm the director of the Minnesota Workforce Council Association. The Workforce Council Association works with the local workforce boards in Minnesota's 16 workforce service areas, as well as the providers of the adult dislocated worker and youth employment programs in the workforce centers. The programs that are delivered by our members are primarily funded under the Workforce Investment Act, which is federal money, federal TANF, the State Workforce Development Fund, and state MFIP dollars. I just want to say first that our organizations, the MWCA and the GWDC, normally work very closely together. We generally have a very good working relationship. Many of the members of the GWDC sit on the local workforce boards, which is a great opportunity for us to share information between the state level and the local level. We hold joint meetings periodically, and many of our workforce boards are working on implementing and promoting the policies that Brian just went over in the All Hands on Deck recommendations that they've submitted previously. And there are many broad themes included in this report with which we do agree. Workforce councils and workforce service providers should be responsible for addressing the needs of Minnesota's businesses, as well as the needs of the individuals that are being served by the programs in the workforce centers. We also agree strongly that pathways are important and require intentional emphasis on labor market analysis, career and skill identification, basic skill enhancement, and aligning worker career interests with occupational skill training programs that address the needs of employers. And discretionary funding could supplement existing resources for career pathways and credential attainment. And we agree that there's a need to be developed across the entire system, which includes Adult Basic Education, MFIP, and our partners in MNSCU, a better way of staying ahead of the trends so that as the marketplace changes, workers can be prepared to transfer their skills to new occupations. And while program data is already available for some programs within this broader system, and it is dependent on partnerships, that it can be difficult to find and make comparisons among those programs. So that's where we agree. But there's more coming, as you can imagine. We are concerned that this report focused very specifically on the employment and training service providers within the broader system, and we do feel that it implies that the workforce service providers are ignoring the need or desire for credential attainment among our clients. Our workforce board and service providers do encourage credential attainment. It is a priority and one of the performance measures for which we are accountable. The availability of resources, the needs of job seekers and employers are all taken into account when job counselors work with our program participants. Though there is a demand for training assistance, not all job seekers want or need additional training. And just as importantly, not all employers require a credential. In many cases, investments in on-the-job training or apprenticeship are just as important. In regard to the dislocated worker program specifically, which this report does call out, some participants want to return to the labor market as quickly as possible to support their families, and others enter short-term training to brush up on their skills in a similar occupation, and still others need to gain new skills altogether in either short or long-term training programs. For these programs, it should be noted that the credential rate reported to the Department of Labor last year was 66.7%. We exceeded the performance levels set by the Department of Labor in this category, and Minnesota is recognized as one of very few states who consistently exceed performance standards generally for our programs. We're also concerned that this report seems to support career pathway and credential attainment initiatives as separate and distinct from the programming done under the Dislocated Worker Program or other employment and training programs that are being operated in the workforce centers. In fact, the Department of Labor has stated in guidance that, ideally, career pathways are not a separate program, but a framework for weaving together adult education, training, and college programs that are currently separated into silos and connecting those services to employers' workforce needs. We agree that Fast Track, which the report does specifically suggest as a model, is a positive initiative that works very well for some of our populations, particularly very low-skilled, low-wage workers. However, it is a specific framework. Broadly speaking, as I mentioned before, career pathways and credential attainment are integrated in different ways for participants within the adult dislocated worker programs and for whom the Fast Track model may not be warranted or wanted, just as the Department of Labor has guided us to do. Finally, we feel that diverting money from the dislocated worker program and opening it up to a competitive process weakens the system that is in place and ignores the fact that the dislocated worker program is producing many of the outcomes being promoted in this report. We aren't afraid of competitive processes. In fact, of the fast track grants programs currently and previously funded through competitive grants, our workforce boards and providers have been the employment and training partner in the vast majority of the successful grant applications. The concern that we have here is that the GWDC is specifically recommending that funds which would otherwise be going to the dislocated worker program, which, as I mentioned before, does achieve a very high level of credential attainment, would be diverted from, rather than build up, the successful system that is in place because of these annual allocations. In our experience, competitive grant programs actually create silos or parallel programs, and in the process described in this report, do not ensure that funds would be distributed in a timely manner or evenly across the state, as the current dislocated worker program resources are. This is particularly concerning at a time when state and federal policy leaders are encouraging entities to work more closely together and to streamline services to maximize resources. In our experience, competition does not encourage collaboration or a focus on longer-term outcomes. In summary, I'd just like to say that because the GWDC and the MWCA have had such a good working relationship, we were disappointed that this report does not incorporate the information we provided, which we hoped would inform the recommendations or highlight the efforts that are being made at the local level to implement career pathways. We have discussed these concerns with the GWD leadership, as they've indicated here today, and we look forward to working with them to find solutions that will benefit job seekers and employers in Minnesota.
All right, I think Mr. Reynoso is up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Edward Reynoso with the Teamsters, Joint Council 32 Teamsters. Wow, you know, I guess I should have gone first.
Yeah, that's a problem sometimes around here.
You know, I fully agree with Oliver's statements, and I come to you from a different angle in the fact that I'm also part of the GWDC. I've been a member of the council for about five years. And I certainly do have some grave concerns regarding this report. Number one, I believe it's a premature report. I don't believe it's been vetted completely. We've had a total of one meeting in December to vet and throw out ideas. And nor do I believe that we've incorporated a lot of the ideas of our stakeholders. And I can tell you that there's some grave concerns. You know, years ago when the Dislocated Workers Program was established, it was an agreement with the employers that this money was going to be set aside to assist dislocated workers through no fault of their own that had lost their jobs. And I think putting this recommendation forward, specifically the first recommendation, opens up the potential that this money would be used for other purposes. And this money would not be destined and for the use of dislocated workers. And that is the biggest concern I have. Now, being part of the Governor's Workforce Development Council for 5 years plus, I think there's a lot of great things that we do with the GWDC. I think there's innovative ideas. There's fantastic ideas that are out there. But this document has some great ideas, but it's not done. I think it's a beginning of what could potentially be a fantastic document. But I don't believe the time has been put into this document. It seems it was rushed through. The time has not been spent on input from our stakeholders, input from the community, and input from the GWDC members. And I want to make sure that you fully understand that this is an executive committee report. It's not supported. It's not been voted on. It's not been put forward as a full GWDC report. This is an executive committee report. And you actually catch that on the very first inside page. You can hardly read it. But I do have concerns that many people are taking this as a full-on GWDC board recommendation or report. And that's not the case. So I can tell you, in discussions this morning, we had the GWDC meeting this morning, there were a lot of concerns raised. There were a lot of questions asked. And to put this document forward now, in my opinion, is premature.
I have a quick question.
Well, the prerogative of the chair goes first.
Sure. Yes, sir.
Actually, and then there was someone else that wanted to testify a little bit here. I will tell you, you know, I've read every report coming out of the GWDC. I've read all the reports that have been dropped off of my desk for 14 years. And for the last 6 years, I've asked for a system that I could compare an apple to an apple without spending 4 hours on a computer. And I will guarantee that no one at the state level, at a governor's task force, anywhere around here, has anyone ever come up with that for me. That's amazing. And I, the past chair can kind of say, can guarantee that I'm not toasting here. So this is an interesting, I mean, I did not expect this kind of a fight from this kind of a report. And the disappointment to me is that the energy has gone into an argument over what's in a report and what's not in a report, rather than figuring out what is working and making it simple for people, legislators, and unemployed people to figure out the system. And that's the problem. The system is very hard. There's about a dozen questions. I have about 7 minutes left. The Workforce Funders Policy Task Force recommendations was passed out. I don't know if they need to say a few words. I'll give you a couple minutes, but then I'm going to open it up for questions, so people, please don't go away. But as I will tell you, identify yourself for the record and very briefly, because we'll go about 5 minutes over.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Andrea Fursan. I'm with Greater Twin Cities United Way, and I'm also here to represent the Workforce Funders Policy Task Force. This is a group of funders, and you have a document in front of you so you can see which funders are represented, that came together a number of months ago to really look at how we could better align our resources and be in strategic partnership with the state to really look at better outcomes. And so it's very much in alignment with what you were saying, Mr. Chair, in terms of some of the frustrations we were feeling around really the need to better understand kind of the outcomes that are being produced and how we can better support labor market needs and the needs of low-skilled adults in our community. So I'm not here to talk about our recommendations here at this time, but I did want to share these with you, and then we'll be looking to meet with you individually and would love your input on this report.
I have a sneaky suspicion in a couple, 3 weeks, you may all be back here. But I have about 10 minutes if people want questions. Representative Kiefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The website is a little outdated. I was actually appointed to this.
Which one? Who would you like to direct this question to?
I don't know. The GWD.
Why don't one of each of the groups get
Wildwood,
down here?
Wildwood? Ms. Wildwood? Sure. Sorry, I missed your meeting this morning. I had to be in public safety. There's some pretty important bills going on in there. The website's list is outdated. I'd like to have the committee members maybe get an email list of the new people in the committee. I also saw I didn't get a real good sense if there's really a good balance on the committee about private business being represented in the committee. So I'd like to make sure that we know who's on it, who do they represent, what companies, whatever.
On the Governor's Workforce Development Council representative?
Yes, sorry, and I said sorry I missed that meeting, I sent a note. You said you're federally mandated. Do you get federal money then to fund this development council? And can you tell me what your budget is? And if there is any state dollars, about how much is from state? Thank you.
Quickly.
I will defer that one to Brian.
Mr. Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the budget question, the GWDC does not receive state money. We're funded by the Workforce Investment Act. In the last several years, we've received $350,000 of the Workforce Investment Act, and there is a statute that relates to budget issues, but it's not conclusive in the GWDC states.
Representative Whiting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first question, thank you very much for what you said about what's happening. Yes.
Your question.
Yes. I'm gone. Mm-hmm. Does everybody agree, the group that came afterwards, do they agree with that there is a...
So the Workforce Centers and...
The Workforce Center, the association, do they agree in the main piece of this report that there's a skills gap? That's my first question.
I think maybe one of you, stay up there. Because we got two or three more.
I'd like to drill down on that. Do you agree in their main observation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leidiger, absolutely. There's no question that there's a gap in some of the learning and some of the education that's needed out there by our workforce. There's no doubt about that. And that's I fully agree that, there's a lot of good stuff in this report. My main concern is taking money that's predetermined that it's supposed to be used for dislocated workers and using it for something else. I think it's an honorable thing to take a position that we have to do a better job at educating our workforce. But not with this money.
One other question. Thank you for both of you. Do we have is the Second Chance Coalition represented on this council, on your council and your association? No.
The head shaking. No.
Okay, that works for me. I'll pass them the rest. I'll get
Representative
the information elsewhere.
I'll pass until they come back.
Representative Metza.
I'll be very quick, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Make it out of here at 2.
Mr. Reynoso brought up a good point that we do need to do our due diligence and make sure that all the parties that have stake in this have their information being looked at as well. And one thing that specifically came to mind, actually, was Second Chance. And with so we basically, and this would be more direct to you too, from the GWDC, you mentioned surveys. Could you tell me who was included in the surveys? And this can all be followed up with after. Who was included in the surveys? More specifically, did you include service providers who serve the individuals with the most barriers? And the reason I'm asking is because I think we need to make sure we're not leaving the 1 in 5 Minnesotans that do have some form of a criminal record. Hanging dry on this, so they're often excluded from the employment that provides these credentials. So, I think that would be something to consider.
That might just be some of the laws that we pass here, more than it is their problem. But there's a reason somebody's not on the criminal justice committee after 4 years. Couldn't take that pill any longer, sending somebody to jail.
Mr. Chair?
I know everyone else here, and I'm going to go back to Representative Albright. I know that everyone has taken a look at the budget numbers that came out from the governor's recommendations, and his recommendations don't carry any funding for Fast Track whatsoever, which is, if you talk around these particular groups, by one of the better groups, one of the better programs. So there's no funding in it for that. Representative Albright.
Okay. In the report on page 16, your notation number 34, it describes under your recommendation number 3 that you want to direct workforce centers to focus more energy on helping customers attain industry-recognized credentials and 1 year of post-high school education. But yet, in the notation, I see that, we've got 8% that have less than a high school diploma, 30% have a high school diploma, 22% have some college, and almost 10% have post-secondary diploma certificate. So I guess the question that I beg for an answer on is, are we dealing not so much with an educational deficiency as what we are training them to do for skills in higher ed? Just like a commentary in terms of, is there a conflict between higher ed and
in the business community in terms of coordination for what it is that we're training our future workforce to actually be relevant and capable of doing once they get out of the institutions where they're supposed to learn what they are to put in practice when they get to the job.
Who wants to handle that one? Mm-hmm. That's pretty wide-ranging.
I can take a first stab at it. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. Thank you for reading our footnotes. So this recommendation number 3 from where the footnote is taken is specifically about adding more triage and online services. Workforce centers do serve about 250,000 people per year, and this recommendation is specifically about doing more online and triage so that some of those people can get the services online, don't come in, so that the workers in the workforce centers can spend more time helping those who need credentials to get them. It is true that a lot of the people who come into workforce centers, the percentages are in footnote 34, already have some credentials. That information's there. I won't comment on the, or I'm not really sure your question on, you know, critique of the higher ed system fulfilling skill demand.
So that would be a credential for a history major that has to go out and be a taxi cab driver? No. Members, we are past the 2 o'clock. Ed, if you've got, let me make a quick announcement or reminder to everyone, and then I'll give you another minute. St. Jude's Medical, you all got an invite to their tour on Friday morning. I know there's going to be some senators, myself, and a few other people are going to be joining us, so we're going to be seeing their world headquarters and a couple of other things with their HR person. So, Ed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Renoso.
You know, I just want to kind of, Representative Metz had kind of asked the question about the survey and having input from stakeholders. Absolutely important. But it's one thing to have a survey. It's another thing to take the survey and the information and the ideas that have been put forward by stakeholders and putting them into a report. And that's not what this is.
And I'll make, thank you all. I'm going to adjourn here in a minute, but I will, you were handed out this Workforce Funders Policy Task Force recommendations. I did read it a couple days ago. I thought it was very good, and I have read the most competitive workforce in the world, and I read the first version and the second, not the second version, but that, I might not get to the footnotes, though. So those of you that can join us on the St. Jude's, read these reports, and I'm sure we'll have people back in a couple, 4 weeks. Committee is adjourned. Thank you.